Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number 21. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And we have quite a show tonight. This is probably the most stuff we've ever had to talk about.
And no kidding. We are jam-packed. I just ran across all this amazing Game of Thrones-related news out there. So we're going to have a whole news segment, for one thing.
And then we even have an interview that we're going to get to in a little bit by this guy, Charles Davis. And he has a lot to say about the love affair, I want to say, between heavy metal and fantasy, which we've touched
and
on
sci-fi.
A little bit in the past.
If you have any interest at all in how heavy metal, fantasy, and sci-fi relate, we have found the guy for you.
I can't believe how much he knows about music, too. It's just incredible. Like, I've known people like that throughout my life, but he just is, like, way up there, dropping names left and right.
Dropping names, dropping knowledge.
But we should get to the real meat of the podcast today, which is A Game of Thrones.
Loved this
Yay,
book.
Yay, I did too. I'm already almost done the second book now, so I have to really make sure that I don't skip into the second book when I'm discussing it today.
Yeah, me too. I'm doing the same thing. I'm about a third of the way through the second book. And unlike Robert Jordan, where I wanted to read the second book, but I never really have gotten started on it, This one, it was almost like I never stopped reading the first book. I just kept going, like, right into the second book.
Did you read on Kindle?
I am reading both on Kindle, yes, and with on my phone too. A little side note there: perfect on the first book, no problem. I'd read it on the Kindle. I'd maybe have to make sure I pressed the sync button before I turned off the phone because a couple times it didn't catch up. Most of the time it worked great, but on the second book, somehow it decided that it was like near the end of the book, and so now it won't. You can't reset the sync point. So now when I switch from the phone to the Kindle, I have to manually find the page.
Sure, you can reset the sync point, can't you? You can at least give yourself a bookmark.
I can give myself a bookmark, but I can't reset the actual whisper sync point.
Interesting. I
didn't do that yet. But anyway, that's...
I was asking because I was wondering if you literally did just continue reading, because that's what I did. I finished the book, and then I had the second book already ready to go. So I went to the next book and continued reading.
That's pretty much what I did. I didn't have it ready to go, but I bought it right then and was reading within minutes.
All right, so we both liked it, and that doesn't always happen, so that's definitely a good sign. Let's talk a little bit about the meat of the book. It's definitely one of the more intense stories we've read. It's a lot more violent. There's a lot more sexual stuff going on. Did you find that the more adult content kind of took you out of the story, or did it fit in with the flow of everything?
Yeah, when we gave that warning on the last episode, I was a little concerned that it might take me out of the story, a little concerned that maybe it might take other people out of the story. But honestly, for me, it really just fit. It felt like it was telling a real story. And and the parts that were, off color or dirty, they didn't ever feel gratuitous. They felt real. They felt like that's what that world is like, and he's just telling me.
Well, that's something I've always had to kind of come to terms with medieval style fantasy, is that I always have these wonderful flights of fancy in my mind about how, if I could travel in time, I would go back to medieval England and be a princess and everything would be wonderful and romantic. But in actuality, if you go back to medieval England, you're pooping in pots and people are killing you and chopping off your hands when you do something wrong. And, everyone's getting raped and everyone's getting killed. And I'm like, man, that is
Well,
brutal.
It isn't quite that bad. I mean, there is glory and there is beauty, but it's, it's not all like that. And when they say sort of like the golden age, back in the old days, things were better. Well, you're coloring the memory. And that's absolutely true of the medieval times. This is even cooler, though, to me, because it's not just historical fiction. It's an entirely different world. And so while it feels real and it feels accurate to a medieval time, it also feels foreign, but like you're really being told the story of this alternate universe or this other planet somewhere where this is the way things are, where dragons did absolutely exist at some point. And and the seasons, I mean, what is up with the long seasons where winter has been coming for years and years and years, and now they're, you know, they have harvests regularly, but I guess the they're in a long orbit, or there was a weird tilt to the planet. I was trying to figure this out, and I started researching online, and I couldn't find anybody that had actually had actually figured out like what was going on in the planetary system that the Game of Thrones exists in to make those seasons so variable and so long.
Well, you have to. It's interesting that you put it in the in terms of like an orbit, because I didn't really even think of it that way at all. Like it being another planet that would have an orbit that was irregular in some way. Because, I mean, you can't have an orbit, you can't have seasons that vary in length, can you? I mean, that's not really possible, is it?
Well,
I mean, I'm not claiming to be a scientist or very familiar with other planets' orbits and everything, but it seems to me that it would typically be the same year to year.
Our seasons are caused by the tilt, not by the orbit. So the fact that that North America is tilted away during the winter, and then as the Earth moves around, it's tilted. The side that's tilted back is now tilted towards.
Okay,
during
that
the
still has to do with the with the orbit. I mean,
so
it's still...
what if this planet is in some sort of unstable wobble, where it's the tilt doesn't stay the same all the time? Obviously, that would cause a whole lot of other repercussions that we don't necessarily see, but. It really fascinates.
Create magic. Maybe that's where magic comes from.
Exactly.
Irregular orbits.
That irregular wobble. It could have a totally regular orbit and just be wobbling all the time because of all the dragons.
Yes, dragons are very large.
You know.
Isn't it interesting how in this story it's not like magic is just something that's taken for granted. It's not something that it's in the world, but it's not as much of a part of everyday life with all the people on the world as it is in other fantasy books.
Yeah, I like the way they treated the masters, who are sort of the doctors, in this, where they're the rational ones. They're the ones promoting science, and they're the ones who scoff at the wives' tales. And they don't do it in a way that makes those guys look dumb. Like, they look very smart. They look like they know exactly what they're talking about. They do it in a way that's like, well, there still might be a rational explanation for what's going on, but we don't know what it is. Or maybe not. Maybe
did
it
they,
is just.
Did they kind of remind you of the, what were they called in Anathem?
Oh, yeah, gosh. We need a live chat.
Yes, exactly. But anyways, they reminded me very much of them. There always seems to be that class of people within these kind of stories that, you know, are both kind of magical in a way, but also the rational voice.
Speaking of the terminology, what did you think of that? What did you think of the sort of like, it's all pretty normal. There's swords and there's helms and everything. But then every once in a while, something's a little different, like the First Men or the Hand of the King or Master or Arrok or what, you know, all these different words that are kind of sprinkled throughout.
It didn't throw me off as much as other books that we've read. I think it kind of flowed more with the story. It didn't take me out of it at all.
And they're also fairly easy to guess, like Meister, M-A-E-S-T-E-R. Yeah, okay, I get that. It's a master, and it's a doctor type thing, and a master's is a degree, so I kind of make that connection pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I also like the way the names are off a little bit.
Yeah, like sometimes they have an extra consonant stuck in, or like a Benjen.
Yeah.
I liked how they did
like
the names as
well. Some sort of celebrity, some sort of Hollywood celebrity name. But
yeah. No, I got a big kick out of the names, actually. Good names for Warcraft characters.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's a
ton. From time to time.
You should go look in the armory and see. This book was just so compelling, and we haven't even gotten to the story. We've just been talking about the universe and the style. Like, the story of Robert and Ned and his family and Winterfell. It was one of those things where you always have that point in the story where the conflict happens and everything changes, and sometimes it all just falls apart and everything you liked about the book goes away. And there was a risk of that, right, in this book at that point when they come to King's Landing and everything changes. Suddenly this family that you've kind of grown to love at Winterfell is ripped apart.
It really made me feel like you said, anything can change in an instant. Like, you can't get too attached to any one character because in the matter of a chapter, they could be gone. And that definitely continues on in the next book, at least, where you're like, oh, really? And it kind of shakes you in this way that I'm not really used to feeling in books, where you kind of get to know a character and get to feel like they're a very integral part of the storyline, and then just to have them ripped away. Like, you don't have main characters killed off very often in fantasy books.
And that's what's pretty impressive about this, is not only did he's like, nobody's safe, it's the world, it's real life, anybody can die, but also there's enough rich characters, which is really hard to pull off, that it's, you've always got somebody else that you still like. You know, sometimes there's those books where like, gosh, I only really like this one character, and if they die, I don't know if I'm going to finish this book.
Yeah.
Not here. Here there's all the characters are in depth, and every time you meet a new one, it just becomes more and more more and more fascinating. Like Tyrion Lannister, for instance.
I love Tyrion.
I wanted to dismiss him at first as like, okay, this is the shallow character. It's kind of the weird brother foil to the main Lannisters. And no, it turns out he's got a whole other thing going on. And in the second book, you start to realize a lot more of the depth of his character.
It's very strange because I do feel like he is a good guy. Like, in my brain, I've categorized him as a good guy who is in a situation where, you know, he's very loyal to his family. He's loyal to his cause in a way, but he also has this sense of morality built into him that a lot of the other Lannisters don't really seem to exhibit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the interesting things about the characters that makes them so rich, is none of them are entirely good or entirely bad, right on up to Eddard Stark. They all make mistakes. They all act out of impure motivations from time to time. I mean, Stark even had a bastard son, so, you know.
Did he?
Not entirely pure. Well, we'll get to that later, maybe. but, yeah, I mean, nobody's perfect, just like in real life. These are fallible characters.
I don't know. What about Jon?
Jon Stark?
Jon Snow.
Jon Snow, sorry.
Well,
yes.
Technically,
well, he's not perfect. He wanted to leave, you know, he wanted to break his oath.
He did want to break his oath, but he wanted to, it's not like he had any kind of bad reason of doing it. He wanted to go help Rob.
Well, sure, but that's what I mean.
He
it's like
to go like do some
muddy
chick or something. I don't know. It's,
well, yeah. He didn't want to go mining.
Yeah.
He just but it's still oath breaking, right? And so the perfectly honorable person is represented by Aemon, who's like, mm-hmm. you know, I was tempted to go do all this bad stuff myself, but hey, you know,
right.
I'm an honorable man and I gave an oath and I'm going to stay here. What are you going to do, John?
So who are your favorite characters?
John's one of them, definitely. I really like the character of Jon Snow. Arya, I think, is probably my top, though.
Yeah.
Like, I get so excited when we get back to her story because she's just kick ass.
Yeah, she's a little powerhouse.
She's a little spitfire. Cheering for her. You're like, yeah, learn this stuff. I was really sad when the Braavan Swordmaster went away because I'm like, oh, I wanted to see that play out.
Right.
Like, see her graduate and become the...
We don't
know.
We don't actually have confirmation that Sirio's dead.
That's true. We don't really know what happened to him. We never saw a body.
Right. So I'm not going to believe that he's gone until I finish the series and don't hear anything about him again.
Which now I understand why people are so frustrated about the series, not that one last book, because this was so well written. You're like, oh, you're killing me.
I've definitely learned that I don't think I'm going to start any more series that haven't been completed yet. I think that might be one of my new rules. Like, even though I love to follow along as they come out, but I'm having a little bit of problem with that right now with the Name of the Wind and Patrick Rothfuss, because I absolutely adored that first book. And he's got a life and he's got a baby on the way and he's got stuff going on and tours, and it's hard to find the time to really commit yourself to writing if you're not feeling it, you know, if the inspiration doesn't strike and you don't have that, you know, rush of creative energy, you can't force something like that. So I'm totally behind him in finding the right time to write the second book and to finish it. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, God, I just want to read it. Like, oh, my God, just publish it, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the difficult thing with the sci-fi and fantasy. These tales that people come up with are so sprawling and so epic, you almost can't tell them in one book. But, mm-hmm. man, once you get started, you know, and you've got people hooked on the crack, you got to deliver it.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I was a fan of Ned. I like to call him, I call him Neddard in my mind.
Uh-huh.
Because he's Eddard,
you
and they call him
up
Ned.
Eddard
so
and Ned.
Neddard.
Yeah.
I really like Neddard. Well, liked Neddard.
Right.
But he was a little too goody-goody. He was goody-goody to a fault. You know, he could have, if he had been able to play the game a little bit better and
though
stay alive, he could have had a much greater impact.
Obviously, we've spoiled one thing, and another spoiler coming right here, just in case. At the end, he gave in, and he played the game.
I know, it was too late.
Goes against everything, you know, that he stood for, and it didn't work. It's almost like you're being taught there, like, see, Ned? Shouldn't have done that. Guess he would have died either way, but
right. I know that bugged me a lot. But
who else did?
I'm trying to think of who else I like. I like Bran. Bran's a little cutie patootie.
Mm-hmm.
Although I had some, you know, he's a little petulant from time to time.
Especially in his condition.
Rickon
who
is a
be?
Brat. Rickon.
Yeah. He's
just a baby, but he's kind of bratty.
He got his mom ripped away too early. You know what are you gonna do?
Yeah. Her? Not a huge fan of her, actually.
She's all right.
I can't remember her name off the top of my head right now.
See that? That's why. How much you don't even like her.
I know. You don't remember either, do you? Otherwise, you would have told me.
You know what? Here's the good transition to some of our addendums discussion. If you can't remember all the characters' names either, there's a bunch of wikis out there that might be able to help you. The Song of Ice and Fire wiki is one of them. You can find that at iceandfire.wikia.com. Caitlin. Cat. They call her Cat. How could I forget? Then there's also a wiki of Ice and Fire at awoiaf.westeros.org, kind of based on the land of Westeros. Those are both okay, but thanks to Padwin on the Ning forum for sending the towerofthehand.com. Not exactly a wiki, but rather an entire site just devoted to all things Game of Thrones. So they have a lot of articles on characters and keeping plot lines straight and the history. And so that's another resource. There's a lot of great resources in these three links to being able to dig in and catch up. And if it's been a while since you read one of the books and you're trying to figure out who everybody is and how they interrelate and you can't remember Caitlin's name, well, there you go. You can look them up at those links.
Yeah, there's just so many characters. Sansa's another one I'm not in love with.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I hated her at first, right? Because he painted her so shallow.
Yeah.
It was like there was no redeeming characteristic. And I never have gotten to like her, but at the end, you start to get some more sympathy for her and understand, like, okay, you know, she's just been a little brat. She's been spoiled her whole life. Now she's learning some hard lessons. We'll see what happens to her.
Totally. But we should keep moving on because we do have a lot to cover. Game of Thrones, which we have mentioned is going to be shot for HBO. They have cast Sean Bean in the role as Lord Eddard.
You might remember him as Boromir from Lord of the Rings. Or he's also in a British film. What does he play there? It's something, The Sharp, I think.
Yeah, so Sharp with an E at the end.
Yeah.
People were mentioning that to me on Twitter.
I think it's kind of perfect.
Oh, yeah. I was expecting Ned to be a little bit older.
Sean Bean's a little bit
stocky.
Older now.
Yeah, I guess he is a little older.
I didn't think
now.
Of him stockier, but definitely it's not the same character as Boromir, but I think this actor has got the right chops to play Ned. He's going to have to be a nicer guy than Boromir was, you know?
Right.
Less hot-headed.
Yeah, and then there's a Game of Thrones card game. Which I don't know if I'll be playing, but it's good to know it's there. It kind of reminds me of like a Magic the Gathering kind of situation, or maybe a Warcraft card game.
I put it in here because it really has a thick visual aspect to the book that I know a lot of people like. If you want to see a lot of art that shows like Robert on his horse, or you know to war.
The images they have, this is exactly how I pictured Cersei. Or Cersei,
Cersei.
That's exactly how I picture her looking.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah.
I have to check this out. I love art.
See what
see
what I mean? It's almost like you're not so much doing it for the game as you are for the art.
Yeah.
They've got, if you go to the site at fantasyflightgames.com, for the card game. They have a lot of the art there that you can look through, and some trailers for coming expansion sets and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Nice. And then we hinted a little bit at in this next section an interesting speculation that that forum members have been having, or apparently it's a pretty widespread speculation in term for people who have read the series. Yes, Sean O'Hara posted this particular one. What was Robert's Rebellion really about? And it's super, super interesting read. I don't want to spoil all of it just because I really enjoyed reading the forum thread. It's pretty long. But it goes through, you know, who is John really? What's the connection between Ned and Robert and the what was the name of their family? The Rhaegar, Targaryens,
yeah, the Dragon Kings.
Right, and what's the situation between Lyanna and Rhaegar, and it's super interesting.
I won't Ned say anything about the mother to anyone.
Right.
And here's kind of the crux of this conspiracy theory, which is that Ned, when he confronted the Kingsguard, there were three.
You're giving it all away. All right, give it away. Go ahead, give it away.
Thriller. There's three Kingsguard guarding what? Lyanna.
Mm-hmm.
And why are three Kingsguard there instead? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's always talking about how Arya looks like Lyanna and how mm-hmm. Jon looks like Arya.
Yeah.
So they're
and
just
also,
saying.
Why would someone like Ned who was pure to a fault suddenly go off and decide to have a bastard
and never talk about the mother, never do anything for her, obviously, because he doesn't
even
talk
to Robert. He wouldn't even talk to her with Robert.
Yeah. And he also takes really good care of John for a bastard
mm-hmm.
in those days.
No matter how just much Caitlin hates him,
good time. And it just leaves you wondering, like, well, wait a minute. Who is? Let's put the pieces together. You know, he loved Lyanna. Who is? You know, John's real father. Why were three Kingsguard guarding Lyanna?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a. You could put the pieces together yourself.
Yeah, here. That's pretty interesting. You might want to check that little piece
maybe
out.
A little something about who Jon Snow really is, and he does say there's Stark blood in Jon, but he doesn't ever actually say John's blood, Stark blood, comes from me.
Yeah,
that's sure. Overinterpreting it, but I don't know. Pretty compelling.
It's a really good stuff conspiracy theory for sure. And maybe you know the books haven't been finished yet; it could still come out.
So I'm trying to give our segments names here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna try this out. We're into the feedback from the audience. What do you think of Bear Your Sword?
Bear Your S Word.
Is that too weird?
No.
That's kind of.
Well,
no.
That could be taken wrong.
Yeah, it could be.
I'll believe
you
this week.
Dave in Portland wrote in and said, check out these lizards they've discovered that swim through sand in the Sahara.
Oh, my God.
They didn't mention it, but I'm guessing they smell like cinnamon.
That's amazing.
They're sandworms. They're freaking. Okay, well, they're not worms because they got feet. But they are lizards, and they do swim through the sand.
They're pretty close.
Only like 10 centimeters long.
And then we found a, Abner. I'm going to pronounce his last name incorrectly. Seniris?
Yeah.
Abner sent in he does wonderful parody songs, and he sent in one about the Kwisatz Haderach. I always mispronounce it. And we'll play a little bit of that so you can hear it at the end of the show. But I just really got a kick out of that. See, not just heavy metal is inspired by fantasy music, and sci-fi.
To the tune of The Rhinestone Cowboy by Glenn Campbell. That's the Kwisatz Haderach song.
Oh, that's the name of it?
That's the tune, Rhinestone Cowboy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of country.
Well, speaking of music, we should get to our interview with Charles Davis. We have a very special guest on Sword and Laser tonight. It's Charles Davis from Metal Gamer and the Chisel and Dizzle Show. And he actually wanted to talk about heavy metal music and how it relates to fantasy. We talked a little bit about this in previous episodes, but he seems to be a super... you know everything about the subject matter. Tell us how you got into it.
Well, I've always just been a big fan of heavy metal and fantasy, really. I kind of got into heavy metal when I was an angsty high schooler. And the thing with heavy metal, there's lots of different genres of heavy metal, and it's this giant, giant universe, and there's been huge textbooks written about it. And the sort of genre I kind of found I was liking a lot and sort of connected with a lot was sort of this sci-fi themed, fantasy themed genre, which for lack of a better definition, I call sci-fi fantasy themed Eurosympho power metal. if that makes any sense. Yeah, for sure. So to kind of break that down, we're talking about this one specific genre, and which I guess I can kind of go into more detail later, called power metal or in symphonic metal. And it's lots of fantasy themes, lots of science fiction themes to it. And I'm saying Euro, not because all the bands are from Europe, even though a lot of them are, but at the same time, there's a lot of American kind of fantasy themed sci-fi bands in South American, but really the main market for it, like 80% of the market is really in Europe.
So it's not all primarily Norwegian death metal.
No, not at all. I mean, the big countries where kind of fantasy power metal kind of stuff comes from is Germany and Finland. Brazil also is a huge market for it, but the real kind of the heart of the whole movie is really in Germany and Finland.
Now you were telling us that one of the reasons you were motivated to contact us was you heard us talking about the Iron Maiden song,
yes,
relating to Doom.
Yes, absolutely. And Iron Maiden is a British band, not a German or Finnish band. So already I'm lying. But there's a giant long history of this whole thing. But yeah, with Iron Maiden, I came across your show about probably a week or so ago, and been loving it, listening to it. And I came across the podcast where you're talking about Dune, and you were talking about To Tame a Land, the song off of Iron Maiden's Peace of Mind album. And there's actually a funny story behind this. It's based on Dune, of course. And the main songwriter, and it's Steve Harris, he's the kind of the bass player, the leader of Iron Maiden, contacted Frank Herbert and said, you know, I'm writing this song about you. It was originally called something else. I can't remember what it was. It was just called like Dune or something like that. And I say, you know, can I do this? Is it okay if I use the name of Dune as the song, et cetera, et cetera. And Frank Herbert wrote him back a note saying, no, you can't use the song. I hate heavy metal, and I specifically hate you.
Wow.
And then threatened legal action. And then so basically what they did is they changed the song, the name of the song to like To Tame a Land instead of Dune, and it was they changed the whole thing, which is actually very funny because there's a lot of heavy metal bands and really fantasy sci-fi themed heavy metal bands that take a lot of influence from Dune. There's actually even a heavy metal band named Dune.
Well, when I was in college and high school, I used to listen to Shai Hulud, and that was before I had read Dune, and I had no idea that there was a connection between the two.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, and you see that all the time, especially in heavy metal bands. You know, there's a band named Narnia, which is I think they're Swedish, and all they sing about is Narnia. You know, there's a Norwegian death metal band called Gorgoroth, which I guess is, my understanding, is named after a swamp in Mordor.
What's the connection?
Yeah, exactly.
This is a long and complicated process. I know we don't have all the time in the world, so I'll try to kind of go through this one string to kind of get to the point where we're at today. It all kind of starts back in the 60s, in the late 60s, with sort of the early heavy metal bands. Now, again, I'm blowing over a whole lot of things here, so I'm leaving out a bazillion stuff, so I'm sure I'll get, stones thrown at me and dirty emails from other metal fans who say I'm leaving people out. But when you go back to, like, 1968, and you see bands like, who didn't really sing directly about these kind of high fantasy concepts, but they had, like Led Zeppelin, Alice Cooper, Black Sabbath, they had sort of kind of black magic-y kind of themed songs. You know, Led Zeppelin would sing about, the immigrant song about Vikings, and
they put bearded people on their album covers.
Exactly. And they had half the songs are about that. They had Led Zeppelin had a few songs about Misty Mountain, which is Lord of the Rings inspired, things like that. And then the other half of the songs are just like, you're a sexy lady, let's have sex. And
I think metal music is totally epic and fantasy is totally epic.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I guess my question is,
to simplify it.
Yeah, there are three things I think that kind of really drive heavy metal bands to write fantasy music. And I think it kind of goes the same way with fantasy authors. One, the people you're inspired by also wrote fantasy heavy metal, you know, so you're also going to write that kind of like, you know, if you write a fantasy author, you probably like fantasy books. Except I heard J.K. Rowling isn't a big fan of fantasy, but I don't know if that's just a rumor. Mm-hmm. The other thing is a lot of these individuals are sort of into, I'm trying not to stereotype people here, kind of, I want to say sort of fantastical, sort of supernatural type activities and lifestyles of their own. For instance, Ronnie James Dio does seances. Like, he's come all the time talking about all these seances he holds, and you know, it's very often defined people who follow various, you know, pagan religions and things like that.
Kind
or
of a cultural we'll read, thing in a way.
Yeah, a cultural thing. It just sort of like their own kind of personal, I think, lifestyle sort of lead them to that. And a third
it's an urge for the dramatic and for the escape, you know, that's sort of like reaching out.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And there's another aspect to this, which is a lot of people put escapism as sort of the reason why. And I guess I sort of challenge that. I guess, I mean, there's a lot of escapism in fantasy heavy metal music. But I think when you look at some of the real influential, really prolific fantasy heavy metal writers like Dio, it's more than just escapism. To me, it's sort of almost a super reality in the sense that you really want to talk about, you know, being lonely. Well, if you write it, what's more powerful than writing a song about being lonely in a room? You know, writing a song about being a 1,000-year-old lonely man on top of a, you know, ancient mountain. You know, it's sort of, or like, you want to talk about conflict, writing about fighting a dragon. It's sort of like this way of almost driving the point home in an extreme form and making it even more powerful than you could possibly do with just kind of realistic kind of phrasing and things like that.
Yeah, it seems like there's a common underpinning there of accentuating, not quite exaggerating, but just sort of elaborating on emotion. You know, yeah. And that's what Veronica was saying, that epic feeling. It happens in fantasy, happens in science fiction too. You know, the space battle and the grand, you know, spaceships. And it happens, you know, that's what metal music is about, it seems like. It's sort of that pushing of the emotion, that very strong feeling.
It's now, about aggression.
Yeah. Were there any examples that we left out of, because we were referencing a specific blog post when we first started talking about this topic.
Yeah.
Are there any other examples that you know of that are pretty well known that maybe we missed?
Oh, my God. Yes.
How much time do we
have? Yeah. I could talk for hours about this. I don't have that much time, though. There are so many examples. I can even begin. First thing... basically, well, I'm skipping ahead about 40 years now, and there's this long evolution of everything, and basically what we're in right now is something I call the second big boom. I think if we have more time, I can kind of explain to you what the first big boom was in the 80s, but we're kind of going through a second big boom right now of fantasy-themed heavy metal bands, particularly in Europe, and there is massive amounts of fantasy concept albums, fantasy bands, science fiction bands, all releasing great material. Some ones you went over were Blind Guardian. You had mentioned Nightfall and Middle Earth. Blind Guardian are a very well-known band, very well-known German power metal band. And they made this entire album based on
it's hard to say.
Which is based on Tolkien. They also have other songs just general songs about Tolkien. Almost all their songs are somehow fantasy or sci-fi based. They also have songs about Dune. There is I'm trying to relate back to the books. Here's the one thing, and this is where I'm kind of straying from the books a little bit, is that when you had this kind of boom going through in the 80s, 1980 kind of launched by... when Ronnie James Dio joined up with Black Sabbath and released the Heaven and Hell album, you start having a lot of heavy metal bands creating their own world. So at first it was sort of, okay, Rush is going to write a song about Rivendell or Dune or something like that. Now it's a lot of people making up their own fantasy stories, making up their own fantasy worlds from there and kind of telling their own stories. There's one particular band, and actually I found out a really cool thing about this band today. Actually, about 10 minutes before we got on this call, there's a band called Rhapsody, which is an Italian metal band which is all they do is like fantasy, high fantasy, sword and sorcery type of thing. And all of their albums are based in this giant fantasy concept story they have called the Saga of the Crystal Sword. And on two of those albums, Christopher, and I just found this out, well, actually, I knew Christopher Lee narrates two of the albums. Mm-hmm. And I just found out that on one of the albums, he actually sings. He does a duet with a singer on one of the albums on
what?
One of the songs.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
It's a
ballad. It's not like a da-da-da-da kind of heavy metal song, but it's called The Magic of the Wizard's Dream. And he has a shockingly powerful operatic voice.
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah, and what you're seeing a lot of, again, I'll go back to sort of the authors you were talking about before. Iron Maiden has a great album that was released in 1987 called Seventh of the Seventh Son. It was really the first album that really got me into sort of fantasy metal, so I really like kind of dropping its name, which is a high fantasy concept album based on the myth of the seventh son, and also previously before that, Orson Scott Card, the year before, had written a book about called the seventh son, and I don't quote me on, but I believe it's loose. The Iron Maiden song is inspired by it. A band called Helloween, a really influential power metal band called Helloween, has an album out called Time of the Oath that they released in the early 90s, which is based on Faust and the predictions of Nostradamus.
Oh, nice.
And Faust and Nostradamus, by the way, are very common things to write about. You have Camelot. There's a Florida-based, Norwegian singer, heavy power metal band called Camelot, who has a album entirely based on Faust, has dual albums entirely based on Faust concept albums. I went over Narnia again, which was, a band that just sings about Narnia.
I love that they only... I mean, it kind of makes sense because that's their name.
Yeah, yeah.
I find it really incredible that they can find that much material to write about, although it is a huge world.
How many times do you think they get tired of answering that question, too? So what do you guys sing about?
Narnia.
You sing about Narnia. I'm interested if has it gone the other direction where metal bands have created, I've known plenty of them that you're throwing out examples of, that create these worlds and create their own sort of storylines. Have they ever gone the other direction where they make a book out based on the world they've started to create for their album?
I am very glad you asked me that, because one of the big things happening right now is Manowar, who is actually from the town next door to where I was born, is releasing this album. They've created an online community called the Asgard Saga, and it's going to be based on their new album coming out, which is going to be, fantasy heavy metal album, but they're also going to be having a book written about it by Wolfgang Holbleem, who I don't know if you've heard of before, but he's a famous German fantasy author who's written like over 200 fantasy books. One particularly famous one called Magic Moon, which is I think the only one that's been actually translated into English. But he's actually teaming up with them, and they're making books like based on this album they're creating. And on top of that, they've created this whole online community where they're trying to get people to come in and like add pieces to the story and write their own fan fiction about this fantasy album they're making. So that's really cool. So check that out, the Asgard Saga. Also, that's the only example I can really think of. There's been lots of talk of it happening before. There's one particular album called the Avantasia, which is created by the lead singer, which is kind of a heavy metal supergroup. It's created and kind of led by the lead singer of this one band called Edguy, this German power metal band. Tobias Sammet's his name. And he basically made three albums, but the first two albums are completely based on this whole fantasy story about this like alternative world called Avantasia. And this guy who kind of goes in the seminary, but then his half-sister gets kidnapped and brought to Avantasia, and he has to fight with the voices in his head who are telling him to go to Avantasia and save her. And there's dwarves and all this great stuff. And it has all the characters are actually voiced by different famous heavy metal singers. So, for instance, you have a dwarf who is sung by Kai Hansen, who's a really famous heavy metal guitar player and singer who is in Gamma Ray and Helloween. Michael Kisk, Jorn Landa, all these like big famous names. And he actually had an entire, he said in interviews, he had an entire book written about it. And he said at one point he was interested in making a book about it. But the thing is that he hasn't made it yet. So I'm assuming he couldn't get the publishing rights or something like that. Dio had stated in an interview once that he released in 2000 this entire epic fantasy album called Magicka, which is actually a really great album. I highly recommend it. And it's about wizards who are at a party, and then some evil stuff happens, and the wizards have to go and fight the evil stuff. And the last track in the album is literally just 20 minutes of him reading you, just talking to you, and telling you the story of Magicka of the album.
And he said,
Yeah, it is. And he said in an interview once that he had a guy who, this was like when Sega, I think, was still out, who was like interested in making a Sega game based off of it. But
that's
Yeah, I guess it never happened. But yeah, there's definitely been people who I think have tried to do that. To my knowledge so far, Manowar's kind of the first ones that actually kind of look like it's really going to happen. We're just actually going to get Wolfgang Kubling to actually make a book based on it.
That's super fascinating. Well, I had no idea that it was this in depth. I know there was some, you know, give and take on both sides, but I didn't realize how intertwined these genres were.
Oh yeah. They're inseparable. And again, this is just. It's not all heavy metal. Heavy metal, again, is this enormous just genre of music that can go, you know, you can talk for hours and hours about. So this is really just kind of the Euro fantasy metal that that's really the focus I'm focusing on right now. But that being said, there are a lot of great, if you're into fantasy, if you're into sci-fi, and again, this isn't, I'm talking a lot about fantasy, there's a lot of great sci-fi albums out there too. Look at Gamma Ray's album Somewhere Out in Space, or No World Order, which is actually based on the book New World Order. Iron Savior, who is actually, all their albums are based on a story they're writing themselves, which is about a spaceship which is sentient of itself, that is basically from Atlantis and trying to find its way home.
That's incredible.
Yeah, and it goes on and on and on. Some key albums to kind of check out if you're kind of interested in stuff and kind of want to look at the evolution. Check out Rainbow's album Rainbow Rising, or Rainbow's album Rainbow's Long Live Rock and Roll. That band is sort of the birthing of sort of this whole genre of fantasy, using fantasy as you know, a kind of a thing in heavy metal. They were kind of a pre-heavy metal band.
Totally taking me back, because with Helloween, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, and now Rainbow, these are all records that I was playing on the Rock Zone in Greenville, Illinois, in 1986-87.
When I was in college, I worked for a local radio station, and I had a heavy metal show. I was always playing Helloween and Gamma Ray, and everyone was always pissed off because they had no idea what I was playing. But I was in upstate New York, so I don't think many people listen to heavy metal up there. Check out there's a really important album, if you're really into this, that was really integral in the sort of launching the popularity of fantasy and heavy metal, which is Black Sabbath's Heaven and Hell album. There's actually, which is really the first time, this is when Ronnie James Dio basically replaced Ozzy Osbourne in Black Sabbath, and they had this really big album called Heaven and Hell. And it's the first time you really see fantasy start being used as more of than just a kind of an escapism thing, is really start being used as kind of an analogy, a metaphor, a way to sort of relate things back to the real world with these stories. And there's actually this one really powerful particular line that's really famous, at least amongst kind of the fantasy heavy metal communities, which is, I have it written down here, "The world is full of kings and queens who blind your eyes and steal your dreams." And that's kind of like that's a famous line to us fantasy heavy metal heads. Some other great albums to check out: Iron Maiden, Seventh Son, and Seventh Son again. It's the album that kind of got me into fantasy metal. Helloween, The Keeper of the Seven Keys, which is generally credited as being the kind of the creator of fantasy power metal, the one that kind of made the genre. You want to check out Gamma Ray's Land of the Free, and anything by Rhapsody is always great. Particularly if you want to see some of the most wonderfully hysterical fantasy heavy metal music videos, just type Rhapsody into YouTube, and it's wonderful.
We'll definitely have to post one up on the blog post for the show notes.
Oh yeah, today. Forewarning, actually kind of shocked me a bit. Well, not that much, but they're Italian, so I guess they don't have the same kind of FCC standards, but their one music video for Reign of a Thousand Flames opens up with a nude woman, so forewarning, just kind of dancing around with a giant, like, medieval-looking knife.
Because what else would they do, really?
Yeah, well, you know. Oh, and if you ever want to see the in my opinion, one of the most underrated but awesomest, is that word awesomest? I don't know, I just invented it.
Is now.
Okay. fantasy, well, one of the most ridiculous, like ridiculously over-the-top fantasy-themed album covers. Look at Yngwie Malmsteen's trilogy, which basically depicts him on a mountaintop fighting a dragon with a guitar.
So I remember the album cover, actually.
Little known fact, dragons can only be defeated with guitars.
I know.
True dragon.
That's why they were the scourge of the earth for so long, because, you know,
through the
electric
heart.
Guitars as we know them had not yet been invented.
Well, that's why you just have to thank Yngwie Malmsteen, because we'd all be dead right now if it wasn't for him.
And where can our viewers learn more about you and follow your work?
Oh, yeah. Well, right now I'm in the midst of sort of updating and changing around my website to host the podcast we've been doing. TheMetalGamer.com is the website, www.TheMetalGamer.com. It's kind of empty right now, so I apologize for that. But hopefully by this weekend, we'll have the podcast start showing up there.
Fantastic. And thank you so much once again.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Charles. We were not kidding. That guy definitely knows the knowledge.
He's like an encyclopedia. It's amazing.
Thanks so much to Charles for willing to be on. All right, time for some unrelated news. This is news unrelated to our choice, Game of Thrones. What do you think of calling this Quick Burns?
Quick Burns. I like it.
Get a little laser in. I like this one better than Bury Your Sword. So you found this this interesting download link for Droid Maker.
Well, actually, the author of Droid Maker emailed us and said that he's giving away copies of his book, digital copies, that you can check out on the website. And it's all the inside story of George Lucas. And, you know, looking at LucasArts and you know, the birth of Pixar, digital video editing, avatars. This is all from the website, and it sounds really interesting. I haven't gotten a chance to read through it yet, but it sounds like something cool that you can either download and read or buy the book and support him.
I bought the book, and I have to say I'm not finished with it because it's some pretty thick material there, but it is fantastic. If you're at all interested in the Star Wars universe, go and buy it. You get a bunch of behind-the-scenes looks at what George Lucas went through to get the thing off the ground, but with a tech perspective, with a real slant towards how did we make this universe happen on the screen. And then it gets into how visual effects basically were reinvented in the 1980s at the impetus of George Lucas, but not just because of Star Wars. He goes into all of these other practices and events and people that were experimenting. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, so definitely check that one out. I'm looking forward to reading that in a big way once I finish the second. I still have to finish reading A Clash of Kings, and then I have to read the fourth Temeraire book.
Yeah, I'm still finishing off the Dune series myself.
I love how we've totally gotten like off on tangents with these books that we start reading.
No.
One of the things. And then you had this story about the moon landing.
Yeah, so this week that we're recording the show is the 40th anniversary of the moon landing. And as I was just kind of digging around, I've been listening to the real-time play of the Apollo 11 mission constantly. It's really, really compelling stuff. I found out that in 1969, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins were awarded a Hugo Award. That's
wow.
The science fiction award. Mm-hmm. And the award they were given was a Hugo Award for the best moon landing ever.
I just love how that sounds like something we would have done today.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Really best moon landing ever.
Best moon landing ever.
And
oh,
I wanted
God.
To point out as well that in the same year, Anne McCaffrey, who was one of my favorite authors growing up, was awarded the Hugo Award for Best Novella for Dragon Rider.
Oh, which fantastic.
Which I'm assuming is also part of the Pern, you know, storyline.
You're in with the dragons, aren't you?
I really love dragons.
Oh.
Maybe I should get like a dragon tattoo. Would that be totally weird?
Oh, I think you should totally do it.
That would really hurt.
Right on your forehead.
Maybe I'll do it for Dragon Con.
Oh, exactly. And we will be going to Dragon Con, which is Labor Day weekend in the United States. We're going to be doing one show. We are tentatively having an author on to interview.
Yes, and maybe some other people as well. It's going to be on, I believe it's on Friday night, during Friday night's sessions. But we'll update you more on information as we've got it nailed down. But we wanted to have some t-shirts to give away to people at the show, people who actually come to the event, Sword and Laser t-shirts that are being designed by our very own Xanar, and who is wonderful. And we wanted to come up with a tagline to put on the t-shirts underneath our logo. And we wanted you to come up with it. And so we need you to come up with a tagline. You know, keep it relatively short, something that can fit comfortably in one or two lines on a t-shirt.
And I'm not going to give you a word limit per se, but just know that the longer it is, the less chance it is of winning.
Yeah. And I guess that's kind of the award, is having a... We'll give you a t-shirt. You'll get a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Even if you can't make it to the event, you'll get a t-shirt.
Get your tagline on the site, on the t-shirt, and you'll get a free t-shirt.
And should we make a forum post for this?
Should we do it a forum post? I think we should do it by email so people aren't like stealing each other's lines.
That's a good idea. Yeah, email it to theswordandlaser@gmail.com. And we'll pick a winner. We have to pick a winner by next Wednesday, so we have time to print the t-shirts and get them ready. So you got a week to figure out what you want to say on the t-shirt. Send it in. We should probably do... I mean, I'm okay with people coming up with as many entries as they can come up with. Is that okay? Or do you think like one entry per person?
No. As many entries, because we're just picking the best one.
Yeah.
And Wednesday, in case, you know, depending on when you're listening to this, is July 29th. So get it in by July 29th.
July 29th. All right. Well, I think that's all we've got for the show today. Thanks again to Charles for coming on and totally blowing our minds with all his knowledge. That was incredible. And if you want to check out the forums, they're at swordandlaser.ning.com. The email address, as I mentioned, is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. And that's it for episode number 21.
Thanks for listening. We'll have a new book for you next month.
Ah, yes. We have to pick a new one soon. We'll be on the forums talking about it. See you guys
later. See you later.
Caladan, on Arrakis I became a man. When they killed my father, the Duke sent me and mother to the desert. Joined the Fremen tribe and survived. Became the leader, Muad'Dib, also known as Kusul. Now there's a Fremen storm arising. See Shai Halur on the horizon. I lead the jihad and fulfill the prophecy. I'm the Kwisatz Haderach, riding out on a worm with the Fedaikin by my side. I'm the Kwisatz Haderach. One day my name will be known to people far and wide, and Irulan will write about me.
With the power of worms and sand, and the Fremen at my command, we'll stop the spice flow and take on the Baron Harkonnen. Not worried about Ravon or Fade, or the Bene Gesserit, the Guild, the Imperium, the Landsrat. Cause there's a Fremen storm arising, see Shai Halur on the horizon. I lead the jihad and fulfill the prophecy. I'm the Kwisatz Haderach, riding out on a worm with the Fedaikin by my side. I'm the Kwisatz Haderach. One day my name will be known to people far and wide, and Irulan will write about me. I'm the Kwisatz Haderach, riding out on a worm with the Fedaikin by my side. I'm the Kwisatz Haderach.
One day my name will be known to people far and wide, and Ireland.